Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Yes, sir. We wear caps and sleeves at this level, son. Understood?
Hello, everybody. It's off-season edition of the California Penal League podcast. We are doing part two of our retrospective and getting our comeuppance on our preseason predictions for your Cleveland Guardians. Today we're focusing on the pitching side of things, but before we get into that, it is World Series time, and tonight was game three of the Diamondbacks and Rangers, and the Rangers won, and I was forced to endure an Aroldis Chapman appearance in a World Series game. It was painful. I don't like it.
And he belongs in jail.
Yes.
I said it.
There is that. But here he is, still pitching in World Series games. He got lit up a little bit, but he held on. But I was thinking, as I was, and I'm sure this is not lost on anybody, and I'm sure that this is nothing new for anybody paying attention, but I've been watching, you know, the Diamondbacks obviously way more this postseason, and I've been following them throughout the year. I kind of knew their structure and how they operated, but I'll tell you what, I mean, the blueprint for 24 is kind of right there, I would say, with the Diamondbacks for Cleveland. I feel like if you watch the Diamondbacks. I mean, 2 years ago, they lost like 110 games. If you look at the way they're structured now, it's right there. I mean, the Diamondbacks were like two games under 500 in like mid-August. Their pitching staff has like, I think they had like a 4.48 ERA, which was like 20th in Major League Baseball. They hit 250 as a team, the same as Cleveland. With like a bit of a higher WRC plus, and they only hit 166 home runs for the year, which was 22nd, and still 42 more than what Cleveland hit. But they don't hit for a lot of power, and their pitching staff is actually fairly middling, and they're just kind of putting it together at the right time. But the way that they're built, I feel like Cleveland has to look at this and be like, this has to be the like catalyst to like go and get like a Lourdes Gurriel.
Yes.
Go get like an Evan Longoria old fart who can like hang out on the roster for the year.
I have names that fill both of those voids.
The Diamondbacks making it is like the most erotic thing Dolan could have ever asked for. Cause he can be like, I don't have to spend any money on any pop. And I can make an argument for the team getting there next year, which is very unfortunate.
Well, that is the cynical view.
Pardon me, as the Diamondbacks might win their second World Series since being created in like the 90s.
94, right?
Yeah, or if the Rangers win.
94. That was
we now don't even have a close partner other than like the Mariners for futility of winning a World Series.
Oh, well, there is no equal in our futility.
That's true.
I mean, since 2016. Well, first of all, all I'm going to say is the goal needs to be make the playoffs. If there's a lesson to be learned from these playoffs, make the make the freaking playoffs. If you can get to the World Series by making the playoffs, you can't if you don't. It's elementary math.
Well, that and the funny thing was, I was looking at even at the Diamondbacks, how they got in. obviously they were the last seed in the NL, but I didn't realize they lost their last four games of the regular season.
They got lucky because of, oh shoot, who were they? Like,
the Reds were close.
They were with the Cubs.
It was the Cubs. Yeah, the Cubs butchered a game late. Like, might have been like the last game or second to last game. They butchered it, and then the Diamondbacks got in.
It feels like it's what I really like about the Diamondbacks, aside from like having like a 23-year-old phenom in Corbin Carroll and like two other really good young guys on the roster who aren't necessarily superstars, but really great like depth pieces in like Perdomo and Moreno, and they've got some good young talent. It's like you do have like the 32-year-old first baseman in Christian Walker. You've got the 30-year-old Lourdes Gurriel. You've got like multiple
dudes in their 30s in the bullpen. Baseball, I think, is what we're trying to get at.
At some point, you've got to find some older guys to fill out the roster. You got
to
do it.
And let me say this before I give you a couple names to chew on. Like you said, Steve, I think the blueprint's there. I think if we're all being level-headed and you know, being honest, I would almost be more, the Guardians are probably in a more envious position moving forward. They have better pitchers. They, you know, are younger. They're poised to make some big moves. Corbin Carroll is going to be a household name. Like, he is not just yet, because quite frankly, you know, I don't know what it is, but you know, people don't pay attention to the Rock or to the West Coast teams, and the Diamondbacks. And they're not the Yankees, and they're not the Dodgers. So he's kind of flying under the radar, you know, outside of those diehards. But I really do think that the Guardians are poised to be in a better situation long term. But here is a name that I would, the day free agency begins, I'd be on the phone with him. And I caught his beautiful mug tonight in the celebration line.
Oh my.
Go out and get Austin Hedges back on this team.
I knew you were gonna say that.
Let's go. Let's go. He could catch two games a week, tops.
I actually do agree with you. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
David Fry can catch some more too, but he can. But if Nick Swisher was the biggest cheerleader, Austin Hedges will be a bigger cheerleader.
I am 100% with you on that.
But like, go and get him. The team loved him here. He brings an easiness of him about him that kind of just like makes everyone just kind of like chill.
You need guys like that.
And because over the course of a season, there's going to be ups and downs. And God, how many ups and downs did we have this year?
It actually felt too. It's funny you say that because this isn't anything new that we haven't talked about. But like, dude, the vibes were off with this season from the 100%. Start.
And a guy like Hedges can kind of just come in, you know, make a dumb joke and put everybody in a great mood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not going to win you games on the diamond. Not really. Like, I hate to say it like that, but he's going to win you games in the clubhouse.
You sure as hell could do a lot worse for a backup catcher.
Yeah.
And that sounds good to me.
But I'd be going to him and going, hey, Hedgie, how's about a 2-year, $6 million deal?
Well, give him the 2-year.
Give him 2 years. Give him 2 years.
6-year. $15 million.
Lifetime deal. Yeah.
6 years, $6 million deal.
No, I'm saying of like a yearly average of about three.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm with you, man. I don't know. I know the Diamondbacks are more the anomaly, but you are 100%. This is the second year though in a row where the sixth seed in the postseason from the NL has gone to the World Series, because the Phillies did it last year.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And the other funny thing is the Rangers had the 9th highest payroll this year, and the Astros had the 10th, but none of the top 8 teams made it, and none were all that particularly close.
No.
Most of them didn't even make the playoffs. So
No, there was, I thought like 6 of the top 10 teams made the playoffs in payroll.
Let me double check.
I looked at that and I was like, okay, the adage still goes that, you know, you're not buying yourself a championship.
So
but you're buying yourself a chance.
So, okay. So of the top 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the top, 6 of the top 10, because, yeah. But of the top 5, only 2.
Okay.
So I guess it gets a little weird there, okay. But I guess I was looking at the top, how top heavy it kind of felt, but sure. You're right. That 6 of the top 10 still made it. But at the same, on the same token, you still had like, there's Minnesota and Seattle were 17, 18, Arizona's 21, Miami's 24, Tampa Bay's 28, Baltimore's 29. So like it was a weird.
If you're looking at payrolls right now,
mm-hmm.
What is 100 million coming at? Because I thought the average was like 115.
Yeah, a flat 100 would put you at like, well, Washington had 101.
Okay,
what is 22nd?
22nd?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm just trying to, because I mean, I definitely think the Guardians should be sitting in that ballpark next year.
Yeah, I mean, there is no reason that the Guardians should have a payroll so far below like Detroit.
It's well, like, what it's, now, now some it's of that crazy. some of that is because Zanino and Bell were traded, that the payroll came down, but the payroll started out around, I thought, like low to mid 90s.
This is updated October 24th.
Yeah, so those deals were off.
No, this was opening day. Sorry. This was the opening day payroll. The Guardians had an $89 million payroll.
89? I could have sworn it was up to like 93 or 94.
I thought what you were going to say with Detroit was Miggy's contract was albatross. So, you know, I get that. But like even then, it's like, sorry. I would just, out of principle, not let the Tigers have a higher payroll than them.
Sure.
Like, fuck that. That's not happening.
No. No, but the Guardians should have some money, you know, to spend. You know, we were talking about it right before we got on. But, I mean, there's a couple names. Like Teoscar Hernandez, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Hunter Renfro, I would take.
Yeah, your boy.
Randall Gerchek. Like, take any one of those 4 guys on a 2 to 3 year deal.
Well, there's going to be a lot of time to talk about this. Yeah. But let's make ourselves even sadder by talking about our pitching predictions that
we did really bad. I did really bad. I did atrocious in this.
This is where I really fell apart. I had you guys dead to rights on offense, but then I really came down and came back down to earth, crashing and burning when it came to the pitching staff.
And this is where I shined, at least on one of them.
No, you nailed you. I did. You have the best record of the pitching staff.
I never calculated it that way. I just know the overall.
Okay. So let's do this. Let's hop in. You know, this is our companion episode to the offense, which you should check out as well, which would be our previous episode. But yeah, let's just hop right in. So I think, oh, God help us. I think the first prop was the number of Zach Plesac starts.
Sure was.
So
Mr. Free Agent.
Well, that's true. Mm. Talking about bringing in some veteran talent. So the over under on the
dude, those will be their moves. Starts. They'll bring in Hedges and Plesac.
No, I think the Hedges train has left the station. I mean the man requested to be granted his free agency.
Oh, you mean Plesac?
Plesac, I'm sorry, Plesac. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's done. Yeah,
like,
he's gone.
The Plesac train is gone. Like, yeah,
he might be in Korea. He might end up in Japan with his
boy.
Korea. Oh, God.
Could you imagine that tag team?
I saw some stuff from Mookie Betts, unless I was like imagining it, but like, I may have to look this up to confirm because I don't want to speak too crazy. But apparently Mookie Betts had some very glowing things to say about Trevor Bauer.
Really?
Yes.
Because so, I had heard rumblings that Mookie Betts was like, get the hell out of the clubhouse.
He's on the record now saying that MLB teams should consider signing Trevor Bauer, and he had nothing but, at least today, had nothing but good things to say.
Wow.
So I don't know why he would even jump into that conversation. Like, it's been years now. It's like, dude, why even associate yourself with that? But oh well. All
right, Mookie Betts.
So that's where he stands on that one.
Mookie Betts. But, interesting.
But yeah, so Zach Plesac's the over-under bet or prop for us was 10.5 starts in 2023, which wasn't so terrible. I mean, well, I think we all kind of knew where this was heading, but in 2022, Zach Plesac made 24 starts, and in 21, he made 25. So, you know, something of a model of consistency. He would miss a game here and there for ripping his shirt off too hard or punching the mound. Chair or the mound, but... You know, overall, you could hope you could bet on 20 to 25 starts, no matter what shenanigans he got into. So that prop felt, I guess, low to me because I took the over and I put him at a blistering 12 before figuring he'd get canned. And Fabs, you put him at 14.
I'm glad I'm wrong on this one, though.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I feel fine about this.
Yeah.
But Chris, you definitely called it. You felt his career would careen off a cliff. And you took the under.
Now, in fairness, I didn't think it was going to careen as hard as it careened.
You know, ten starts is pretty rough.
But my thinking was that we had all the pitching depth in the minors. Even like before getting to like, even like a guy like Gavin Williams, like I surely did not imagine Gavin Williams making the number of starts that he did like this year, but just the pitching factory that is, and the fact that Plesac hasn't really been all that great the last couple of years, I was like, yeah, they're going to move on from him. So
I was right. Much quicker.
I was right.
Yeah, you were right.
I didn't think it was going to be like a real life, like, imitation of the train from Back to the Future Part 3 careening into the valley, but you know, here we are, and that's what it was.
yeah that, but hey, look, it got you a win.
It did. It did.
So there you go then. Okay, so the next one we all nailed.
Yeah,
and I think we all felt that, I if not, it's hard. It's hard to get 15 to 16 wins as a starter.
It is difficult. Yeah.
So,
but Cal did it last year.
Oh shoot! I forgot to say, how many starts did Zach Plesac make?
Zach Plesac had 5.
Oh my goodness! Yeah,
5 starts.
Oochie mama. Yeah. God. Okay. So, all right. That's disgusting. Moving on. Cal Quantrill made 15 starts.
No,
I'm sorry. Had 15 wins.
15 wins.
15 wins in 22, which was a very good season for him, which doubled essentially what he had in 21. And so
it was so good, he was named the ace of the Canadian WBC team this year.
And then promptly got lit up.
Yeah.
So quick.
So, but he was the ace.
He was the ace. And then about, what, an inning and a third later, he was like never to be seen again in that WBC.
Yeah, that was about it.
Yeah.
And we all, I think, as Guardians followers, were as quickly writing off the WBC meaning anything as quickly as possible. So, but we were, I mean, he put it together towards the end of the season, but
he did.
It was a rocky road for Cal Quantrill with injuries and everything through the year. So, anyway, we were really drinking the Kool-Aid to start the year, and we put the over-under on Cal Quantrill wins at 15.5. And I don't know if all of us were drinking it too heavily because we all took the under.
Speak for yourself. I said 15 again.
You were just rolling right out there with 15 again.
Yeah, I was right around.
Yeah, me and Fabs were like, yeah, 15. He'll be he's not hitting 16, but he's gonna get close.
And I only thought it was gonna just miss because maybe he gets a slight injury, but it can't go that horribly wrong. And, yeah. Well, it did.
Yeah, I had 12.
Yeah,
I just thought it would be like I just view him as a perennial like 12 and 10.
Pitcher. And you know what? If he's your fourth or fifth starter, that's probably better than 80% of the fourth and fifth starters out there.
I would take that all day, every day. Now, that was still perhaps drinking too much of the Kool-Aid because
I have some questions as follow-ups if we can take a second here to pause.
Yeah.
Two quick things. Do you buy into that him leaving spring training and going to train with Team Canada played any effect in his down year?
No, I don't buy that for a second because Merrill Kelly was a beast all year long for the Diamondbacks. I don't buy it for a minute.
Okay. I don't either. I'm just saying there are people out there who say that stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm like, eh.
I think it's all up to the individual. I think at this point in your career, it's on you to, prepare. And if anything, it should help you, I would think.
I would think so, too.
To get that kind of competition and to be like talking with other coaches.
You're pitching against better teams than you are in spring training at the WBC.
Yeah, better talent. Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, at the end of the day, so, I think it's all just individual.
So second quick question on Cal. Did you see anything the last, whatever, six starts or whatever it was of him that gave you hope that's the Cal that is that's more of who he is moving forward than not? And then with that same line of thinking, does that make it easier to trade a Bieber in your mind?
I don't think it makes it. I'll let you answer this too, Fabs. I don't think it makes it any easier to trade Bieber. I just think I want Cal Quantrill on the Guardians, but whether it's a bullpen arm or as a fifth starter and he can come in and compete, I think he's earned his September was solid. He finished the year in his last six starts. He had a 2.76 ERA. His FIP was still 4.60.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same old Cal Quantrill where like,
but that's his MO.
You know, and
he walks that tightrope.
I think he should come in and compete for the fifth starter spot. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I want him on the team, but I feel like it's independent of like Bieber to some extent. It's like I'd want him on kind of regardless.
Oh, yeah. But I guess maybe the better way to look at my question is knowing that you have McKenzie, Cal, and the three rookies, not to mention anybody else coming up through the system, which there's still a number of guys that will probably make their debut this year or early, 2025. Does that make trading Bieber a little bit more palatable, I guess, is the better
way to put it. I could comfortably open the season with him as your fifth starter. I'd feel fine about that.
Yeah, I like him in that spot. Him and Logan Allen competing for it, or having six starters and maybe Logan Allen spend some time in AAA. I think I shifted back to like I want Bieber on the team this year, even if they they end up just like getting nothing for him. I would love to like go for it with him, go for it one more season with him, because that's a really solid rotation. If McKenzie's healthy, Bieber's healthy, three rookies, Cal, like that's definitely the best in the division. Probably one of the tops in the AL. And we've been talking about the whole you get in the postseason, you have that kind of depth, and you need that depth, as last season showed, when you lose, you know, 3-4 of your starters in your rotation. Like, I would love to not have to rely on a bunch of less proven young guys than we already have that we're going to be relying on going into next year. And, you know, Bieber, when he was healthy, he showed he still had it. His health is definitely becoming a concern. But also, I firmly think that makes him affordable. I mean, there might be an idiot team, and there always usually is an idiot team that's like, I'm going to pay $30 million for him. I don't know. I just think we can get him for a couple of years. That would be relatively team friendly for an ace.
Yeah. No, I mean, to answer my own question, I think I'm kind of probably in between the both of you guys. Maybe after I rephrased it, I think it makes trading Bieber easier. Yes. But Fabs, you said something that was kind of actually, and I don't think you meant to say it, but it was wrong. Even if Bieber does stay and he leaves next offseason, we get a compensatory pick.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we do. So, yeah, we don't. Yeah.
So I mean, like, it's not a player, but yes, exactly. And somebody was doing
a first round, right?
Yeah, it'd probably be a first round compensatory pick. So that you're probably talking about a pick that's following in the, I'm going to just go out on a limb and say like 35 to 40 range.
Mm-hmm. Not bad.
And somebody on Twitter was doing the math towards the end of the season and like comparing that pick and, you know, trading Bieber for some prospects. And it was kind of eye-opening in the sense that that pick has more value than the prospect. Because it was some kind of like,
I mean,
not a bad prospect, but you know, maybe not a top, probably not a top 50 prospect.
Well, it's also worth rolling the dice too, because depending on the year he has, or even going into next season, I still think there's a very, very decent chance they could sign him.
Yeah. I'm still on the bandwagon of 3 years, 20
million.
I'm not
opposed to it. I'm really, really not opposed to it. Like, still, especially when you look at like, this past season certainly illuminates it. Every season does, but like, there are so many good veteran bats out there that you can get.
Oh yeah,
that you can plug.
I mean, I rattled off four just before we really started diving into this. And
yeah, we rattled off a handful with barely looking at the list, and you know, we've our broken records here, but you don't have to do much to get these guys in.
No. And honestly, I think
so. I think if you say you sign, I mean, look, what's a better scenario? Trading Shane, not that I wouldn't do both, but would you rather like trade Shane Bieber for Austin Hayes, essentially?
Yeah.
Let's say, or Anthony Santander, or would you rather keep Shane Bieber and sign Lourdes Gurriel as well? It's like, give me both.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
so like,
yeah,
it can be done. It's like staring you in the face.
And honestly, that maybe getting a veteran. I mean, I know I said Hedges earlier. And then like getting a bullpen arm or two is all you need to do this offseason in free agency. And we maybe spent an additional $30 million on the payroll? Maybe. Or I should say increase the payroll by about $30 million. Better phrased. But I'm
sorry. That would be remarkable. I would my brain would explode. I'm expecting them to inch to 95.
I mean, there's a very real chance though there's that too.
I'm just hoping that with another year
non-zero chance
of Blitzer being a minority owner, maybe the payroll inches more than it has in the past.
Oof. We'll see.
I'm being optimistic. I have no knowledge, and I've heard nothing of it that should, you know, make me feel that way. But that's my Christmas wish.
I like it. Okay. What do we got next for?
The next one was our McKenzie wins that we set at 12.5.
Should have set it at 0.5.
We should have set it at 0.5. Little did we know that he would literally pitch like what, 8 innings?
Four starts. Yeah, eight innings? 16 innings, 4 starts. Yikes.
I said he would be in the running for a Cy Young.
I do recall that.
I was very wrong on that.
He probably would have been the Cy Young winner of guys who were on the injured list for most of the season, though.
I don't know, man. That was a pretty big list.
The injury bug hit a lot of people this year.
There was a decent amount of good starters, but I thought there was like the over under for that was 12.5, which like when you look at Tristan McKenzie from last year, you're like, oh, he's 25. He's taking the leap forward.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, he had 5 his rookie season, 11 last year. And
that felt like a gimme.
A goose egg. Had a goose egg.
But he had a goose egg. We all took the over, clearly. Fabs, you had him at 17. I had him at 15. Chris, you had him at 14.
Yeah.
So all of it was grossly overestimating. But what are you going to do? That's kind of a wash because he got hurt.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not like he stunk it up.
No. It's nothing that he did. And I mean, when he was pitching very well. So again, you know, albeit all 4 starts. But, you know, here's hoping that Tristan comes back next year healthy, can, you know, make us all look like fools when we set it at the win total at 10.5 next year and he, you know, busts through that and gets 15 to 16.
That's right.
So, yeah. So I'm rooting for him. I like Tristan McKenzie a lot. And I it's just unfortunate what happened this year. Well, speaking of Shane Bieber, we got our first Shane Bieber. I thought we had 2 Shane Bieber bets. Let me double check. No, I'm sorry.
No, I think that's it.
No. Okay. But his ERA plus, we set it at 140 because in 22, he had a 132 ERA plus. And then in 21, it was a 136.
Yeah, it's basically we were looking for a return to like the 2019-20 Bieber.
Yes.
Because in 21 and 22, yeah, it was 136 and 131. So, you know, hey, look, that's saying is he, you know, even with the decreased velocities, he's still going to be an elite starter and stay healthy all season. And the answer to those questions is like kind of and no.
So, well, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think he could be this generation's Greg Maddux. In the sense that he's topping out at around 93, 94 on a good day. But he can paint the corners like Bob Ross. And
I think you're right.
I mean, I can see it. I can see it in a lot of his starts, honestly. I think this year.
I like having that. I like having if he really does develop that further and he's all in on Maddux, I think it's good to have some diversity in your pitching rotation of different starters. It really like throws, you know, Tim Wakefield, RIP.
Yep.
He would really throw teams for a loop when all of a sudden like you're getting Pedro one night and you got to go against a fucking knuckleballer the next night in the postseason game. It's difficult to prepare for that.
Yeah. 100%. I'm right there with you. I love that versatility in the lineup. in the rotation, I mean. So, like we just said, you know, we would all love him back, and hopefully that comes to fruition, to be completely honest.
But we definitely took, so the 140 ERA plus, Fabs, you took him as over at 142. Yeah. Chris and I took him at the under, and I went 130. Chris, you went 134.
Yeah. And yeah. And I think, you know, injuries played a little bit of a part too this year for him.
Yeah. Again.
So I'm just kind of, you know, just looking at this for like, you know, in the future, you know, I think maybe next year we set it at like 130, and, you know, I could see him kind of, if everything kind of falls into place like we're hoping, he could be that sneaky good pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, he's still at a 110.
Yeah, ERA that's nothing plus to sneeze year. At.
You know,
better than average.
You know, you're looking at a guy who had a 380 ERA, a 387 FIP, and a 110 ERA plus. He gets hit harder than he kind of ever has, and he strikes out fewer batters than ever, but like, you know, I think he'll adjust a little bit more to how he's throwing now and how guys see him. And I'd still want a guy like that in my rotation. I just don't think he's going to be, you know, we've said it a million times, he's not going to make crazy money.
No.
So I still think there's that possibility out there realistically that they could sign him, but any team would take him.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's pitching star teams that will probably want to swoop in and get him. Well, our next one, I really thought we did we had a good idea here with Aaron Civale in his walk to strikeout ratio, setting it at 4.5. You know, Savali's not one to really walk too many people here recently. But that ratio plummeted from last year's number. Last year he had a 4.45 ratio, and then this past season he had a just over 3.5. And Steve, I think you and I took the over. We took the over. We really thought he was gonna continue that trend. Fabs saw right through the nonsense and almost nailed the prediction, like right in the mark. That's impressive.
I almost said with this prediction he was going to get traded to Tampa for our future DH, but I didn't want to go too crazy.
Well, that's what our listeners want, though. So just remember that for next year.
I'll be more bold next year.
Yes, I want some of those other little ancillary predictions sprinkled in next year. That'd be something.
Yeah, just like when it comes to you, man. Yeah. We don't do these on video yet, but that should be coming soon. But we always see Fabs kind of like his eyes roll back into his head.
I put these crystals on my head,
yeah,
and then
yeah.
I like disappear for a while, and they see me levitate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But sometimes you won't tell us what spoke to you. Mm-mm. And it's like, you really got to start telling us because
I, sometimes the dark spirits don't want me to. They do see me take my can of bones and roll it across my table. And it tells me everything I need to know.
Right. It was frightening out. The first time, actually.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to know though, because it just spelled out Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And you don't really know exactly what.
Exactly. Like, yes.
How does that factor into anything?
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah. And I think I believe we were talking about the Buccaneers earlier that day too. So mixed messages very easily could have been.
Didn't know if Tom Brady was going to unretire or what was going to happen.
Yeah, it was a weird time. It was a weird time when we made these predictions.
Yep. So yeah, I guess we didn't account. I guess we didn't account for. So his as a season, Savali's was 352.
Yes. It actually got better when I think he went to Tampa, if I remember correctly.
It got way better.
Yeah.
So we didn't account for such a lack of strikeouts in Cleveland, really. But he was blowing the doors off people in Tampa. He was at nearly a 12 strikeouts per nine innings. And he still had only has like his typical two walks or so per nine, which really pumped up that average. So he ended with a 352, and you and I, Chris, both took the over and we're off. But yeah, Fabs, you almost nailed it at the 3.5. So good work on that one.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Next we had Emmanuel Clase saves.
Speaking
which,
of weird seasons.
Very strange. And I think it's interesting because this is a really interesting one, trying to nail down a closer save numbers, because there's a lot of variables to that, where if the team is good enough to even a couple times a week beat a team by four or five runs,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to, you know, not going to happen. Or if a team stinks, there's not going to be as many potentially save opportunities. It just depends.
But Clase is in a very unique situation where he's in a good team. Not great, but a good team this year. And they didn't like to score runs.
Yes. Playing in an ass load of one run games. And so we set the number for Clase at 40.5, which is a very fair number. He had 24 saves.
Yeah, great.
21. 42 last year or in 22.
Yep.
So we set it at 40.5. And we all took the under, believe it or not, which is an interest. I mean, I know it's bold to try and go for 40 saves, but we all took the under. Chris, you almost, man.
Almost had
you
it.
Took
almost
the under
had
at 40. It. Yeah, I did 35. Fabs, you had 38. And Clase ended with 44 saves because he was pitching every single day.
Yeah.
We should have done blown saves too.
Oh gosh. Maybe next year. We can definitely do that next year.
We can expand on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can do this again.
Yeah.
What we'll do for next year is we're going to have the two-parter even at the beginning.
Yeah. We might have
more batting, more pitching.
The way that this is just even during our discussions, you know, we'll say something and it's like, oh, that'd make a sweet, sweet little prop bet right there. Let's put that in the recesses of the mind and remember that for next year.
I like that.
So,
and we should definitely check in on it next summer.
Like we could do like a status report.
But yeah, we got to do some status reports because I feel like that would have really helped me feel even more depressed about the season. Looking at like what I thought Zach Plesac would do.
It's like, hey, you know, like this team is just middling and doesn't really, you know, can't get out of, you know, out of the mud, and you just want to throw some salt on those wounds some more.
Yeah. It's like, I want to feel better about myself. I should go look and see what I thought Miles Straw's OPS plus would be.
Oh boy.
Surely I wouldn't have said 100 or 90 or whatever. But yeah, so we all lost on the Clase saves number. That should be a fun one next year because there's even more variables, I feel like, on that one. All right, what do we got for the next one? All right,
so this one is a bullpen one. And follow me here for a second. It is the number of bullpen arms who would have a strikeout per nine of greater than nine. Now,
so collective
total. In the 22 season, there were six such arms. Oh, and we also had there was the caveat that they had to pitch a minimum of 30 innings because, you know, sometimes a guy might get called up, pitch 3-4 games, and strike out, you know, four batters in three innings, and then there you go. He's over that ratio or over that mark. But in 22, we had six such pitchers. And in 21, we had five. And we set it at 7.5. You know, kind of thinking that, you know, hey, there's some good strikeout arms in that bullpen this year. And then quickly, James Karinchak was not on the team any longer, and Clase was blowing saves, and really didn't have a setup guy for a while there. The bullpen got bleak.
It did.
It got very blue.
And you just missed it with a couple guys. So like,
yeah, there's a few guys that were close.
Class A didn't get it. For starters, it was 7.5. Fabs and I took the under at 7 and 6 respectively. And then Chris, you went with 8 and the number was 5.
Yeah.
So there were only 5 bullpen arms with those caveats that had the strikeouts per 9 innings of greater than 9. And probably, you know, it's like Aniel De Los Santos had an 8.5. So that was close. Mm-hmm. And then Class A, it's like at this point, you wonder a little bit about what's going on because his was only 7.9.
But in fairness, he was never much of a strikeout guy.
But that's all the more reason why he should really develop some sort of other
breaking ball. Man. He needs
something.
I do think some of it is being overworked.
100%.
I think that impacted his velocity a lot. He also needs to, it's multiple things. He needs to develop another off speed pitch, that doesn't have to use it that much, but just know it's there. And maybe not pitch 6 days a week would also help.
Yeah. He had what, Steve? He had 72 appearances.
Class A had 75.
75. Ugh. Yeah, that number should really decrease by at least 10 next year.
Yeah.
Ideally, we're scoring more runs. There aren't as many save situations.
That would be nice.
I mean,
that would be nice. But actually, it's funny. It's like he had 75 appearances and only 44. I mean, you look at like save opportunity tie game opportunities going to extra innings, stuff like that. I understand cuts that down, but that does speak to what you were saying. Fabs was like, he also blew a shit ton of saves.
Yeah. He did. So, yeah.
He did quite a bit of that.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at our boy. If you're talking about the predictions for next year, our boy that we should bring back, Ronaldo Lopez, did have a 9.8. strikeouts per 9.
Ronaldo Lopez coming out of the pen in the 8th. Hit. You could go, I mean, and you hope that Trevor Stephan bounces back too. You hope that this past year was just a little bit of an anomaly. And to have both of those guys as your 7-8, it's nice.
That's nice. 7-8-9. That's any combination of Trevor Stephan and Ronaldo Lopez and then Class A. It's like it just makes the rest of that bullpen just...
Everything falls into place.
Oh, Sam Henches?
Sam Henches in that... Yeah.
That's glorious. Yep. That's as good a back end of the bullpen as you could ever ask for.
I'd have to double check and do some more research on it, but I still even think that there's guys in the minors that have some late inning experience that you could probably that might be on the doorstep, you know, not to mention any additional free agent moves. Just makes it's re-signing Lopez just makes too much sense. And I know a lot of people are saying, well, he's going to probably demand close to closer money.
Perfect. Great.
All right.
Good. You all can right. have it.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Like, okay. Why not?
Because if it doesn't work out, or if the team stinks,
yeah,
you trade him.
Yeah, he's valuable.
He's a great asset.
So that's one thing that we as fans, other teams do that, and the Guardians haven't done that. That kind of stuff. But I mean, look at all these teams that'll make, you know, 1 or 2 year free agent signings and they're out of it by May 1st. And then at the trade deadline, they're shipping that guy off.
That's the MO of any,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's all those teams that aren't really in contention will sign a veteran with the express. I mean, it's like, why do you think the Pirates signed Carlos Santana?
Yeah.
You know, it's right. Like, yeah, we're shipping him off. Like he's gone in July. It's not,
I mean, it's smart. it's smart business to, you know, maybe you get lucky and it's just like one of those weird seasons, things click. And it's like, oh my gosh, we're like 33-19. We're doing so much, like our young guys are hitting in a way we didn't think. Our pitching's good and great. Then you have a great veteran presence. But more likely than not, when it doesn't work out, you can quickly be like, cool, we can get at least an asset that we wouldn't have been able to get.
That become a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Man.
Exactly.
Get like a Junior Caminero for like nothing.
Oh, if only some team would ever just give up on a pitcher who was facing a 40-man roster crunch for a potentially top 10 prospect. That doesn't happen, though, does it?
No.
Oh, oh man. Okay.
At least they got him back. At least they parlayed Aaron Civale into fleecing the Rays.
Yeah, it's a step in the it right helps direction. Soften the but you blow know what would have done it for bit. Me? Getting Kevin Cash out of there.
I know, man.
But we can talk about that another time, too.
Yeah, eventually the Guardians will have a new manager and we will talk about it.
And chances are the manager will probably be at least our age, if not younger. If you want to feel old.
Sick. Yeah. I don't even have much of a handicap on that at the moment, to be honest.
No. I don't. I have some.
Council was in today.
He was. And he's going to meet with the Mets tomorrow or the next day, I thought.
I see him going to the Mets, honestly.
And the one executive came from the Brewers over to the Mets, and they have a history together.
And also it's the Mets, and that's a pretty juicy.
Yeah.
But the one thing that's going, I would say, in our favor is, it's in our favor, but it also then kind of quickly falls out of our favor, is Council's from Milwaukee. I don't know if that matters to him, you know, being close to home.
Or just
he's
that
from
small.
South Bend, Indiana.
Yeah. Well, that's where I think he was born, but I thought he kind of grew up in Milwaukee.
Grew up in.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's a Midwest guy. So does he want to go to New York?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I'm also projecting here, too.
Yeah, you never know. And also, it's like, as a manager, he probably wants to win.
Yeah.
So it's like, well.
Well, I mean.
What would you rather go to a team that will give you unlimited resources to do that? Yeah, that's juicy.
But the Mets aren't trying to win. According to a certain pitcher who's in the World Series right now.
Also, the Mets, I mean, the Mets, it's one of those, like, and I think New York is like the market in Major League Baseball where it is like an awful experience if things aren't going right. Like Boston even is like pretty indifferent some years. You know, when you're supposed to be winning, like it's like we got so close and I took out this pitcher. You're going to get destroyed by Boston media. But like New York media is like never fun.
Yeah, they made Buck Showalter age quicker than like that guy in The Last Crusade when he drinks from the
wrong grail cup. The wrong chalice.
he was looking ragged by the end of the season.
He was.
Let's see here.
We're coming down to the last couple.
So pitcher wins. Overall pitching wins.
No. Well, that was team wins.
Oh, is this team wins?
This was team wins.
I was like, wait a minute, 87. Like, okay.
Yeah,
did we not do this one yet?
No, we haven't.
Okay, this is these are some of the extracurriculars.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm pretty sure I ripped this right from some sports books that had the Guardians at 87.5 wins this year.
Oh, that felt like such a gimme.
Oh, it was like that's easy money, man. Like, especially coming off that 92 win season the year prior.
Yeah.
It was like, oh yeah, you know, 87.5. Yeah, we're going to, you know, we'll take a step back. We'll have 90 wins this year.
Right.
And that's exactly what I said. Now that I'm looking at my prediction.
Yeah. I had them just matching 22.
Yeah.
Fabs, you had them at 96.
I was very optimistic going into the season.
You know what though? It's like, boy, you don't factor in Bieber and McKenzie essentially being out the majority of the season. You don't factor in Josh Bell being a complete fart of a signing. You don't factor in the rest of the offense taking a giant step back. Well, for the most part, you don't factor like guys like Oscar Gonzalez, just like talking about careers careening off the cliff.
Oh my gosh. So,
you know, hindsight's 2020. I'll be right there in March when we do this again to probably project 90.
Especially once we make
92.
Especially if we come anywhere close to the free agent signings that we've been discussing.
Oh,
we're going to be like, yep, they've addressed all the problems. This team is deeper. We are set and ready to go. Even if some of these guys don't pan out, we got X, Y, and Z waiting in the wings. Yeah. I mean, I know what I'll be saying. Like,
yeah, I'm ready. I'll drink. Look, it doesn't take much for me to drink the Kool-Aid. Don't get me wrong.
I don't think we did the Tito ejections.
I think we didn't. Yeah, I think we left that one off too.
Let's come back. Let's circle back to that one. I want to end on that one today. Just as a little, you know, tip of the cap and thank you to Tito for the 11 years. We did have one bet that wasn't a Guardian specific bet. Well, it was, but it wasn't. It was the number of Judge strikeouts in the playoffs that the Guardians pitchers would amass against Aaron Judge.
When they inevitably played them
again. Yeah. Because it just seemed like destiny in March that, you know, that was going to be our route to through the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Really hard to strike out a guy when you don't make the playoffs and they don't make the playoffs. So it ended up being that there were zero strikeouts. We had set the over under at 12.5. And Steve, you're the only one who took the under.
I did take the under.
Me and Fabs were very confident that matchup would occur and that there'd be a lot of strikeouts.
Well, I took the under and put it at 10. I didn't even put zero.
No.
Like
that would have been the real baller move right there.
That would have been
zero.
Like for once, we're not gonna face them on our way to the World Series.
Yeah, but again, you know, we'll take a look at these.
This is a learning experience for us.
Before we get to that Tito one, we have one last one of rookie debuts. And after a season where we saw 17 rookie debuts in 22 and 9 in 21, set it at 8.5. You know, there weren't as many prospects that we all collectively saw knocking on the door. You know, I don't want to speak for all of us, but I think if I remember correctly, you know, it was kind of, we knew some of the names. And this is the one of the rare instances where we all got it right. And we all took the under.
We did good.
Yep. We did.
Yeah, we nailed that one.
There were only 8 debuts this year. Steve and I,
ones you would,
Steve and I
would have expected,
predicted 8. And Fabs, you took 7. So, you know, all right there.
Yeah, we nailed that one.
Yeah. That'll be an interesting one next year, too. I could see that number dropping.
Yeah. I think it'll be like 3 or 4 next year.
Well, there's always those guys that like,
oh, like random.
Yeah, there's like random guys that pop random. Up. Like this year, like Rokio made his debut. Mm-hmm. And he literally played like 12 innings.
It is a tough one. It's a tough one to gauge, no matter what the team, how good the team is or like, where they're at.
Yeah, there's always,
you just never know.
There's always some randos.
Yeah, if it's like, God forbid, somebody of importance like goes down, that changes everything too.
Yeah.
Yes. It's like again, God forbid, Stephen Kwan gets hurt. It's like, oh, fuck, what are we going to do? We have no outfielders.
Miles Straw.
God.
I think I'll just phone it. I think I'll just pack up the season at that point.
Yeah.
We're trying to be upbeat in the off season here.
We're trying to be happy.
Trying to be excited. Yeah.
And we'll end on a happy one. The number of ejections from Terry Francona. He had 3 in 22. I don't remember why we set it so low at 1.5. I don't know if we were expecting him to like miss half the season due to like medical complications or what. But
well, he definitely didn't like blow it up.
No, he didn't blow it up. No. But I mean, he matched his total from last year. So I mean, he got 3 again. And we all took the over again. Again, ending on two where we all were unanimous in our decision making. And
that one felt like a gimme too.
Yeah. I mean, 1.5. That was small potatoes.
Yeah, two would have been juicy. That'd have been
two and a half would have been probably in hindsight probably the number to go with. But
yeah, we'll definitely do this again for 24, but we'll bust it out with more. And we could even do, now that we've got this going, we could do the lifetime standings.
Oh, we will.
Yes.
So we will.
Yeah.
So as of right now, Fabs and I are 500, and Chris, you're right there.
I'm right there.
A couple games
right there.
So
I'm in striking. I just need a good week.
I'm of the belief we should be doing many. This is my goal for 24. Is my only New Year's resolution, and for this podcast is to do way more games throughout the season where we have to keep track of standings and stats for ourselves. Yes. Where it's like our predictions, you know, whatever the case might be. I need some. It's like they do it on all those, you know, MLB wraparound shows. They do it on College Game Day. It's always there. Silly little picks, and I'm always like, oh, whatever, who cares? But now I've had a
now
little
that
bit
we're
of
on the inside,
we get yeah, taste. I got oh god,
got a taste of the juice, and I want more. So we'll have to get real weird with it next year and do like we got to do like, you know, all of our like award predictions, standings predictions, who gets the closest to like the actual standings across every division. I think would be fun.
Ooh, that would be.
And see who can get most accurate on like. All that kind of stuff, I think, would be a lot of fun. Like, we should go, like, here's what we should do. And this is just kind of wrapping it up and us, me just talking. So if you're still listening, just, this is, you know, how the sausage gets made here. But we should do, like, instead of doing, like, our pitch clock questions for a while, we do, like, a different prediction element. And, like, one could be, like, trying to predict, like, the top 10 batting averages in like AL and NL and like seeing how many we get, I think would be a lot of wild fun. Get real funky with it.
Do that.
That would be wild. Going to become real big degenerates.
See who are going to be the biggest differentiation points between ex WOBA. I think would be who's going to be an improved ex-WOBA. That would be fun. But I don't know. I think it's worth becoming degenerates over our predictions.
Yeah,
we'll just now that we've had a taste.
Just have like a slight, you know, gambling addiction now. And
yeah.
Just mild.
Not to, this is all for fun.
Not to, to just besmirch that, but
no, my actual gambling with money, none of my season long bets or really even any of my World Series bets, even when the playoffs started, have performed.
Oh, they I was drinking the Braves Kool-Aid before the World Series, before the playoffs started.
And I was drinking the Phillies Kool-Aid. I was drinking the Yordan Alvarez Kool-Aid for like all the hitting stats and props. And I also was not drinking the Braves Kool-Aid before the season because I took them to, it was like, I think their over under wins was like 92 or something, 93, 94. And I think I took the under
Like it's a high win total.
Yeah.
It's hard to do that.
I guess I don't have the gut. I don't have the guts. I guess I just don't have the guts.
I don't have it.
I'm a big baby.
Yeah.
All right.
That is all of them.
Okay. All right. Well, that wraps up. That puts a little bit of a bow on our thoughts for 23. I think moving forward in the offseason, we'll certainly talk more about the previous season, but we're going to definitely try and have as much of a forward facing.
Yeah. Be talking focus, probably about
a lot of free agent stuff.
Free agent, managerial. Manager.
Yeah, baby.
Trade targets.
Trade. Yeah.
Bunch of bullshit that won't happen probably.
Yep. So. Yep. Maybe take a look at some of this Arizona Fall League stuff now that it's kind of wrapping up. We got, I think, like 3-4 more days of the regular season in the Arizona Fall League.
And Chase DeLauder and Kyle Manzardo show.
Yeah, dude, they are. Oof. You want to daydream? Go take a look at those stats.
Yeah, you want to talk about drinking the Kool-Aid in October? I'm all about that.
Though, and I've been looking for a numerical value, like the baseball reference will do for spring training, to kind of show you the caliber of players that they are facing in the spring training games. Mm-hmm. But I do recall that the Arizona Fall League is pretty good talent. I don't know what it overall equates to, if it's the equivalent of double A player, you know, a bunch of double A players across the board, or, you know, double A to triple A kind of range, or whatever that assessment might be. But I do tend to think that they are higher level players on average.
Okay.
That you're seeing there.
I like that you're going to those depths in the offseason, because it makes me feel better about the fact that I was reading a Baseball America article about the biggest exit velocity gainers in the minor leagues from this season.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a very interesting stat.
That is a very interesting.
Where it, you know, and a lot of them are like, a lot of them are younger guys because, you know, they're 19.
Sure.
Then they turn 20 and they're getting bigger or whatever. But there was one interesting name. There was one Cleveland player in the system who was on this list of like the most improved exit velocity year to year. And it was Daniel Schneemann, who...
First baseman for the Clippers?
Yes.
Okay.
He, who had actually a pretty okay season in Columbus.
Yeah, he was a guy where I was noticing his name in the box scores.
He had 30 doubles this year, 13 homers, 17 stolen bases. He hit .267 with .360 on base. And he's had some smattering of decent seasons in the system, but seemingly at 26 sort of like put it all together for Columbus. And I was like, okay, whatever. Who's this guy? But he actually, among all minor league players, has done something to like greatly increase barreling up on the ball and improving his exit velocity to the point where 30 doubles is no joke.
No.
Especially in like 419 at bats. So, I mean, I don't know if there, I don't even know what his situation is in terms of like, if he's like a free agent at this point, given that he's like 26, I have no clue what his like situation is in Columbus, or if he'd even be eligible for like the minor league portion of the Rule 5 if they don't leave him on the roster. But on like the actual like Clippers roster when mm-hmm. that portion comes around. But I don't know. Say he becomes a random utility guy next year. Who the heck knows? There have been I'm looking at like Steven Vogt, who may or may not be the
front runner
for the manager position, but I think his career started when he was 27.
I believe he was a little bit older.
He was 27 when he made his debut in 2012. So stranger things have happened, people.
Yeah.
But those are the depths that I have to go to in the offseason to convince myself that there's some diamond in the rough.
Right, so, right.
That's where my head's at right now.
Well, if there is, look to see where, you know, if we make any trades, that was probably the diamond in the rough.
Yeah, the track record here lately is indicative of that. Yes,
we see that in like 2 weeks. It's like Cleveland trades Daniel Schneeman to Tampa Bay for some random prospect
for the rights to
no. Yeah, if I'm seeing Daniel Schneeman's name anywhere, I know for a fact it's because other teams were like, hey, look at this guy hitting the ball, the cover off the ball. Let's go. Right.
They're reading Baseball America, too.
Yeah, exactly. They're subscribers like me. That's behind a paywall. Not everybody gets to see that.
Yeah, that's not out there. I mean, I don't have the subscription.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, I'll give you the login if you want it.
I might have to take that. I might have to.
Because that's the kind of juicy details they give you on Baseball America.
But you know what? Reading something like that in late October or November when your team's out of it just makes the day go a little bit better.
It's kind of nice. It's not nothing.
It's not nothing. it's better than the garbage out on most sites.
That's like that joke from 30 Rock where Tracy Jordan says he'll give Kenneth, like, I don't know what the number was, but it's like 100 doll hairs. And Kenneth goes, did you say dollars or doll hairs? And Tracy says, doll hairs. They're not nothing. They're not worth nothing. Yeah. So that's kind of what this feels like
to me. It's not worth nothing.
Yeah. Okay. On that wonderful note about the deepest depths of the Cleveland minor league system, I think that wraps this up. We will get going on some off-season fodder here as the World Series kind of wraps up here by the time we record next. Obviously rate, view, and subscribe and all that good stuff. But we're looking forward to talking some 2024 baseball with you when you hear from us again. Catch you guys later.